Let's get back into our lesson here this morning. We're talking about proving God's will and some of his wish list. We started out with the good will of God, and we're now working on the acceptable will of God. And there's some things he's told us that he desires. And if you actually paid attention to much of this list, you realize that the things that he says he desires are not the things that you would normally try to offer God. You wouldn't think that some of the stuff, like taking care of widows, would be something you'd offer back to God. And he said, give me that. And you're putting money in the offering plate, another $5 or $10 or $15 or $20. And some of your cases, you're actually putting in quite a bit of money. And you're doing it with the idea of, well, God, I'm giving you all I can give you. I'm sacrificing to do this. I've done that. I'm so righteous that I gave God so much money, I couldn't even pay my bills. You understand what I just said? I gave him so much money out of my paycheck that I could not pay my payments. I couldn't pay for my utilities. I couldn't buy my food. We ran slap out of money. Why'd you do that? Because I thought God was interested in money. And I wasn't in a church that preached about money. It wasn't about that. They were just talking about God, and I wanted to do something back for God. Well, I figured one of the most important things to me was money, so one of the most important things to him must be money. And I said, well, okay, God, prove me herewith. I'll prove you. You can't outgive God? Well, we'll find out. You say, were you trying to outgive God? No, I was just trying to do something for him. And if he gave me the money, we'd have kept it up. We ran out of money. She said, how long are we going to do this? I said, well, we can't pay our bills no more. Can't pay the bills no more. Obviously, that's not the Lord's will, because you're supposed to owe no man anything, you know? You say, what's that mean? You can't borrow money for a house? No, you don't owe the next payment until it's due. It's not like you can't borrow. Why is that? That's to keep you out of trouble. But we give God what we think he wants because it's what we want. And it's not at all. That's not the case at all. That's what I said. If you're paying any attention to this list, you realize that God's list is quite a bit different than your list. You made out a list of stuff that you could do for God, you'd be actually shocked to find out that almost nothing on your list would match his. Isn't that weird? Kind of a shock and a surprise. You say, man, how come they're so different? He says, I told you your ways are not my ways. When are you going to start taking me serious and paying attention to what I say? And instead of thinking the same way you think, when are you going to start thinking outside of the box a little bit? Anyway, we were looking last week at 1 Peter 2. We'll take one quick look at that and wrap up one more little thought about it. 1 Peter 2, we'd read 1 through 5, but basically verse 5 says, ye also as lively stones are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. That means that God receives them with pleasure through his son because of his son's righteousness. Now you have his righteousness, and the things that you do in Jesus Christ, he will accept if they're spiritual sacrifices. You say, what kind of spiritual sacrifices, you know? Well, you know, like we talked about, making melody in your hearts with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. That's not God telling you, hey, you better start singing to me. That's the desire for your Creator, the emotions that you have for your Creator being expressed in song. That's what it's supposed to be. That word thank you is supposed to be a reflection of what's already on the inside coming out. That's what's supposed to be. It's not, Lord, thank you for this food and blessed our bodies use, you know, that kind of stuff. It's supposed to be a real true sense of feeling the freedom of America to be able to come here and meet when there's people in garbage city living there just because they love Jesus Christ. I wonder how many Americans would do that. Well, you can just shut down every church in this whole country. I mean, just shut the doors. If they said, okay, you want to go to church? You guys want to keep meeting? Okay, you forfeit your house, you forfeit your bank accounts, you forfeit everything except what you can carry. You own nothing anymore. And now you got to go live at the city dump. You got to make your living out of there. You got to eat out of other people's garbage if you can find enough. You want to do that? Spiritual sacrifices? Do you realize that when God judges us, he's going to judge us with those people in present company? I mean, who in the world are we? We're his spoiled brats over here. That's what we are. And I'm more and more convinced than ever that the only thing that happens when you do more and more for somebody is enable them to keep up with that same lifestyle, and you make their condition worse and worse and worse and worse to the point where they expect it. And once they begin to expect it from you, then you're the enemy if you don't continue. Now, that's what's going on. And it started the long ways back, but when the government got its hand into this thing with welfare, it spoiled a bunch of people to the point where they are just absolutely worthless because they've all just been spoiled rotten. How come this place is in such a mess? Don't you realize that the love of money is still the root of all evil? But anyway, moving along here. He wants these things that are spiritual sacrifices on our part. Praising our Creator. Whoso offereth praise glorifieth me. Basically, it comes down to every heartfelt awareness on your part to draw attention to Him, to magnify Him, and glorify Him. That's what it comes down to. I mean, these verses up here behind me, if those things ever got real to you, and they do at times, where you're telling somebody about something, a sunset, clouds, whatever. I mean, I was out water skiing the other day. I'm about to turn 62 years old. I'm out there water skiing like I was still 18 years old. But you think about that stuff. How good has God been to us? Can you eat and drink to His glory? If you can't do it with thanksgiving, you ought to be able to do it just understanding the pleasure you receive because of what He's given you to allow you to receive it. He wants us to be impressed by Him. He wants us basically to be overwhelmed by the way He made us. Anyway, anything you do to magnify Him, draw attention to Him, even in your own heart, you don't even have to open your mouth. You can look up there at those clouds and see different things in those clouds and how the sun shines on them. My wife and I are looking up there last night at that stuff. And it's just amazing to realize that God enjoys the living art that He's created. And we get to enjoy it because He gave us eyes and a brain and understanding and wired the whole thing up to where we could see it and watch it, comprehend it. And then lately, realize that He's the one that does it. He's the one that keeps everything turning. He's the one that brings that sun up in the morning. He's the one that sets that thing in the evening. All things are created by Him. All things consist because of Him. They exist because of Him. And they're there to bring Him glory and honor. And when we go about our life with just our attention on us and what we get out of it, we don't glorify Him at all. He said, so it's a little bit of a sacrifice on your part. What's that? Get your attention off of yourself. And every chance you get, try to get it back on the one that made you and how great He is and what abilities He has to make something like you that can eat something as good as that and then go burn those calories off doing all kinds of stuff that's fun to do and sometimes it's just hard work. But you realize what kind of a factory we've got right here within us? I mean, it's just incredible what He's built here. Anyway, moving along, let's go on over to 1 Peter 2:18-20. Servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. What's froward mean? It means basically somebody that's hard to get along with. You ever had anybody that's hard to get along with? You worked for anybody like that? You ever had anybody hard to get along with? He says, not just to the easy ones to get along with, the good and gentle, but to the froward. For this is thankworthy if a man for conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully. For what glory is it if when ye be buffeted for your faults, ye take it patiently? But if when ye do well and you suffer for it, you take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. You see how different his list is from the list you got? Now it says, I want you to suffer for doing the right thing, and I want you to be patient. That's what I want. Well, can't I just come to church without missing a Sunday all year? Can't I work in the nursery more? Can't I give you more? Can't I pass out tracts more? Can't I pray more? Can't I read my Bible a little bit more? You see how much of that's on God's list? I want you to read your Bible more. This is acceptable with me. I want you to pray more. Basically, he says, forsake not the assembling yourselves together as a manner of some is, and so much more as you see the day approaching. And this is acceptable to God. I don't see that in there. What's in there? Things that we would never even think that he would desire. He wants us to suffer for doing the right thing, and he wants us to do it patiently. You ever had somebody get on you at work for doing the right thing? Misunderstand you? Mistreat you? I have. Did I take it patiently? Not if I could help it. But I didn't realize that that was part of what God's will is. I didn't understand that that was something that God desired. I didn't understand that God would receive that with pleasure, enhancing the reason that he made me. Didn't make sense to me. So if you submit to your boss, even if they're unreasonable and hard and mean and wrong, this can be done so that God gets pleasure from your suffering. But it's conditional. Isn't that great? I mean, I just love verse 19. For this is thankworthy if a man for conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully. What's that? That means that you have to do it on purpose. Don't you get that? It's not like my boss is a jerk and I'll just be patient. I mean, I can't do anything about it anyway. And in this economy, I can't go find another job. And so I'll just have to put up with it. And I'll just, yes, sir, whatever you say, sir. You know, I was trying my best to do what you wanted. Just go along with the flow. That's not what he said. He didn't say stand there like a cow in a hailstorm and just take it. He said stand there like a cow in a hailstorm looking up at God and saying, if this is what you want, it's fine with me, Lord. Just bring them on. For conscience sake, what's that? That means with a conscious effort. That means with an awareness of what's going on. Anyway, you got to do it on purpose for God, and you got to do it willingly. Remember how he says, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth the cheerful giver? Don't you realize that what you're doing there is you're giving something to God that's on his wish list? Okay, God, I'll do it if I have to. I don't want nothing to do with it. You just keep it. Okay, Dad, here's your birthday present. Never mind, kid. Just keep the thing. I don't care what it is. I don't care how much it costs you. If you don't desire to give it to me, I don't want the thing. Don't you understand that's exactly how God feels? Why do you think he said not grudgingly or necessity? Unfortunately, so many preachers today will take anything that you give them. No matter how you give it, no matter what attitude you give it in. And they won't try to correct it. Why? Because the love of money is still the root of all evil. It's a sad state of affairs. I mean, here we are living on an earth that's being run by the devil, the god of this world. We got this natural man. We got a deceitful heart that's desperately wicked. There's none that doeth good. All our righteousness are as filthy rags. Man at his best state is altogether vanity. And we run around, you know, rubbing our fingers on our chest, polishing our nails, saying, I went to church on Easter. Well, I stopped over there and helped that woman the other day. I must have done something really good when I was a kid because God sure is blessing me. We think that gain is godliness. We think somebody with a lot of stuff, God must be really blessing. And it don't work that way. That's not God's blessings at all. It just makes you a bigger target in most cases. So it's conditional on suffering on purpose for God. What else? You got to take it patiently with understanding that praying for relief may be in opposition to God's will. In fact, if you read that just like it says, it's blatantly obvious that it's against God's will. So you get a hard to get along with boss, and the first thing you start doing is praying for relief. I said, you sure you want to do that? Yeah, I want relief, God. Are you sure you want to do that? I want relief, God. Okay. Hey, boss. Hey, you're fired. You got your relief, buddy. God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. And like we talked about in that message a couple weeks back, if God's going to resist you and you want relief, it's because you're being mistreated, and only by pride cometh contention. And so here you are in contention with your boss, and God's going to give you the relief, but he's going to do it with his resistance. Hey, you better get down there and sign up for unemployment, boy. Why? Because I don't need anybody like you around here giving me a hard time. You can't pick your family, but you can sure pick your employees. Bye. So you got to do it with some patience, and you got to understand that praying for relief may be in opposition to his will. You also have to realize and understand that the suffering now has an important purpose. God has given you an opportunity to do something for somebody that speaks universes into existence. And you blew it. You say, how do you know I blew it? Because I've blown it. We have all kinds of opportunities God gives us. We just don't know what they are. We still want to buy him that football. Get you a set of new golf clubs, God. What else? You also have to understand that God not only knows about your suffering, but he appreciates it beyond your knowledge and understanding. How can you enjoy somebody else's suffering, God? I told you your ways are not my ways. Well, I don't understand how you can enjoy suffering, God. He says, I'm long-suffering to you. He's long-suffering to usward. He says, you begin to understand some of my own attributes if you do that. If you suffer with me, you'll reign with me. It pleased God to bruise him somehow. That doesn't make any sense, God. Wouldn't it make a lot more sense for me to just give you an extra $50 or something and go buy a pack of tracts and pass them out or teach a lesson or do something for you, God? Yeah, you can do something for me. You can suffer for me. Man, I don't like this. He said, but I do. Now, if you can do something for somebody that can make people, and all it takes is just some patience and some suffering to do something back for him that he likes, that's worth doing. But we don't think in those terms, you know. Anyway, you also need to understand that God made it crystal clear that it's his desire that you suffer patiently. That thing has to be a total understanding and awareness that it's he that worketh in you, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Of his good pleasure means he's given you the opportunity. He maketh sore and bindeth up. He woundeth, his hands make whole. He puts you where you're at. You say, well, I don't think God's that involved in our lives. I think the only part of our lives that God is not directly and immediately involved in, moment by moment, is your responses to him. I think that's the only time that he goes, hands off for a minute or two. Okay, you made your choice. Okay, here comes the next one. The Lord spared me a couple speeding tickets in the last two Sundays. What's he doing that for? Sometimes he does it to show he has mercy. Do you understand that? If it's God that worketh in you, both to will and do of his good pleasure, the situations he puts you in, you can either give him credit for it, or you can just say, time and chance happens to all men. Oh, that's just chance. It's just an accident. It's a coincidence. You can either give him credit or not give him credit. Probably won't get to this morning, so I'll just touch on this. You know, Paul got up there to the third heaven. When he showed up there at the third heaven, I was looking to see if he'd actually seen things, because faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And I said, man, what did Paul say? Did he say he saw stuff up there that wasn't lawful for man to utter? I had to go look it up. He didn't see stuff. He says he heard things that were not lawful for man to utter. That's pretty interesting. But you realize what God did there. God put him in a position to know stuff that none of us are supposed to know. And then he said, now you can't tell these people what's on the other side of this deal. That's what he did. Well, why did he do that? Because God says, I'm working on something. Now you understand what I'm working on. And if you go down there and spill the beans to these guys, their responses won't be out of their heart. Their responses will be because, uh-oh, I know that $20 bill was underneath that thing because my boss put it there to see if I was going to steal it. I ain't stealing that one. I'll take it back to him. Say, I found this under my desk. I don't know who it belongs to, you know. What'd you do with the other one I left there last week? Oh, man. That's what God's got going on. He's got a program going on here that this is all temporal. And we're just here for a short time. And what God's finding out is, what's in your heart? How much of your life are you going to spend put in effort for me, the one that made you, for the purpose that I made you? And how much of your life are you going to use up and waste on yourself? I didn't think that was a waste. It sure is. You brought nothing into this world, you take nothing out of this world. How could you possibly benefit beyond your death? You can't take nothing with you. And I'm not talking about money. God's wish list. Anyway, you get back into this stuff and you realize that you can present your body a living sacrifice. Present your body as a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, acceptable unto God, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Or, as he asked, too much of you. Man, that's just too much. My punishment's greater than I can bear, God. That's unreasonable. Are you going to contend with your maker? Do you realize that only by pride cometh contention, and every single person that got mad at God instantly invoked his resistance? He promoted God to defeat him immediately. He said, okay, God, okay, I'll take you on. God says, I'll take you on too, bud. About a year later, God says, hey, how's that working for you? 5 years later, hey, still working out the way you want it to, is it? Well, next year you're going to come and see me. We'll see how you do then. What fools we are. What fools. I remember getting mad at God to the point I actually cursed him. Isn't that weird? How in the world can the creatures act like that? Why do you think that every chance a man gets when things go wrong, immediately he starts GD this and GD that? Why do you think that is? What's inside of a man that brings those words out without even thinking about it? Because we're contending with our Creator. And what's happening is we immediately recognize who we're dealing with. And we're doing that on a spiritual level. That's why they're always bringing God into the subject. It's because on a subconscious level, they know what's going on. But in our conscious mind, it's kind of like right over the top. There isn't any reason for people to think like that. You don't have to train yourself and condition yourself to say those things. In fact, most guys get to the point where they say it without even thinking. Why do you think he says, you know, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain? I wonder how many times we take his name in vain singing those songs. Anyway, has he asked too much of us? Really? He says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your body a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And when he says it's reasonable, it's reasonable. He's not going to ask you for anything that's unreasonable. Why? Because he made you. He knows what you're capable of. He knows what you have need of before you ask. He's got the hairs on your head numbered. He's aware of you more than any other thing on this planet. You're more valuable than many sparrows. I know exactly what's going on in your life. He said, well, I wish you knew what was going on in mine. He said, I wish you'd study a little bit. I wish you'd take me a little more serious. I wish you'd actually pay a little attention once in a while when I'm trying to show you something. And if we do, he responds to that. And our life will be, with God's blessings, they will be in direct proportion to how we respond to him. And that's the truth. Your response to God determines his response back to you. If we take him serious, he said, now that's one of my favorite ones right there. I'll take him serious too. If we're just all about us, God says, fine, that's the way you want it. You do it your way instead of mine. Let's close in prayer.